What's up, everyone? Welcome back. Episode 27 of Breaking the Plane. I'm Burge, your host. I'm here with my boy, my old friend, my arch nemesis, Hogan. Welcome back. We are back after 2 weeks. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm fantastic, man. I'm so good. I'm better than good. I am just ecstatic. I'm loving life. Things are going great. I feel like some things might have changed recently. I can't put my finger on it. I think something's going on, but I don't know. How you doing? I'm excited, man. I'm here.
I'm excited too.
Let's go. Let's go.
I want to start off by saying I'm incredibly sunburnt. My face, I'm sure you could see in the camera, my face is destroyed. I was outside today doing yard work and with my son, basically from 11 o'clock until 5:30, just outside nonstop. I'm hurting. I have sun fatigue. And all that. I was laying here as I was putting my son to bed, and I'm like, am I going to be able to stay awake for this thing? But guess what? I'm ready to go, baby. I am so ready. I'm excited for this. We do have some changes to discuss here. So you will probably notice that there is only two people here now, Mr. Hogan, my arch nemesis, and myself. Joe and Coach Eck have decided to move on to focus on the golf sides of the of things. That is where their passion lies. And we just want to wish them the best in their future endeavors with that. And we're also an independent podcast now, no longer associated with a network. So we got a lot of changes coming in a short period of time, but we have a lot of good stuff, good ideas. The brain has been working overtime these last 2 weeks. That's why we weren't here last week, folks. We had some serious brainstorming going on. Hogan, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, first and foremost, I want to say that I believe one brain was at least storming amongst the two of us. No, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, okay? Like I said, we got – things are cooking. Things are cooking, and we couldn't be more excited to bring you guys more awesome, awesome content that is just going to rock your socks. I mean, we already got an amazing thing going on right now with our top five lists, which, sneak preview, we got another list coming for you soon, but I'm not going to get ahead of myself. But no, we got some great stuff coming for you guys. And like I said, for myself personally, and I definitely got to speak for Burge here, we could not be more pumped, thrilled, over the moon to bring you guys more football stuff. It's just going to be bigger and better than ever before. We're going to be hyper-focusing on everything between the socials, keep an eye out for like the Twitter, the Instagram, the YouTube. All that stuff is going to continuously grow. We're going to keep bringing content to you guys. It's going to be amazing down the line. And I mean, that's just where my brain's at right now. We got so many things that we're mulling over. I mean, it's tough enough to get Burgess to shut up in general, but when you get him excited about something, he's rocking and rolling. So it's great. It's phenomenal. What else we got, buddy?
So sometimes I talk too much to a fault and I end up getting triggered, dude. Oh man.
Not you. Come on.
You should have seen me and the Bruins discords the last 24 hours or so. You know, obviously I'm on the Two Pets Deck podcast and we've gone back and forth on the goaltending stuff. And I'm not going to sit here and blame the goalie for last night, but the Leafs daddy was on the bench and you can tell it's still freaking bothering me, man. It's still bothering me. And, you know, not to cross sports, but the Patriots do the same thing to me. So it's going to come in the future. You guys are going to see a little bit more from me in that sense. So definitely looking forward to what's coming in the future. You had a little other type of show you wanted to tease. We talked about off air here. Do you want to talk a little bit about that before we move on into the NFL news?
Absolutely. But real quick, I just want to say I came so close to, no pun intended, poking the bear last night, because I, full disclosure for you listeners out there, my co-host here, Burge himself, tweeting up a storm during that Bruins game last night. And I saw one that was just like a bazillion laugh emojis. How is Toronto even a playoff team?
I came
so close to mentioning you in that one, just being like, hey, buddy, what happened? You can't be saying that stuff in the first period. Don't be doing that to yourself.
When it's Toronto, you can. When it's Toronto, I wouldn't have done it any time else, but when it's Toronto, you could do that stuff.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. But anyway, I digress. No, yeah, like what we were talking about is for those of you who either A, know me in real life, or B, that have come to meet me through Twitch and other streaming shenanigans. I've been across Discord. I've been across different streams. We got things going on where I'm very, very excited to potentially bring you guys in the future. We're going to be looking into doing some more live stream stuff, which, again, not to get ahead of ourselves, we got a little bit of a tease for you guys potentially coming later this week. But for me personally, what I would love to do is set up with my Twitch account, especially during the in-season stuff on Sunday mornings. I plan on going live and we'll be talking all things fantasy. We'll be talking matchups. I'd love to get listener contributions in there, hitting it up with chat, seeing what people are thinking for the day. But like I said, the brain juices are flowing. We got the ideas rocking and rolling, and I can't wait to share more finite details with all you amazing people out there. But it's going to be good stuff, and I'm excited. Like I said, it's a little early because we're still so early into the off season, but it's just, I'm so pumped. I'm a broken record, right? I'm how excited I am, but it's amazing. Like what we're going to be coming up with at this point with the different segments and whatnot. But again, don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're locking it in. We got this episode rocking and rolling. We got some news that we got to get to. Burge, kick us off. I think we got some retirements to go over. So give me what you got for retirements.
You talking about all this stuff is just making me want it to be September. Like I'm already there. First retirement I want to talk about: Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan officially retires from the NFL, signs a one-day contract, that's the whole thing with the Atlanta Falcons. Is it just me? I thought the dude actually retired last year. Wasn't he? He was in the booth this year.
Yeah.
You know, doing the commenting and stuff. I thought he was already retired. I had no idea that he was still, like, technically a free agent.
Yeah, it was a strange thing. I remember hearing, because he came out and they announced, it was CBS that he signed with, I believe, right? I think he was with CBS. And he came out, and I remember it was the strangest announcement ever, was like, hey, so I'm joining the CBS crew for game days. And then he like added as a little caveat on that tweet or whatever the hell he put out. And he's like, but I'm not retired yet. And I remember thinking like, oh, okay, it's like a placeholder kind of thing that he's doing just until a team gets desperate enough to be like, Matt Ryan, please come and lead us to the playoffs with our 4-13 record or whatever the fuck it is. But yeah, I considered him pretty much donezo last year when when he fell off the face of the earth. I mean, the Indianapolis thing was just a train wreck a couple of years ago with that whole situation. And I've considered him gone since he left Atlanta, regardless of the situation. So it's unfortunate because as a local dude with Boston College, that he was kind of like a folktown hero around here for a while. I think he brought BC up to its highest national ranking ever, or even since, you know, the Doug Flutie days. But I mean, the one thing with Matt Ryan, he'll never, ever, 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 ever kick that 28-3 tread, baby. It'll never be the end of it. Which, nope. As Pats fans, we love it. We love it. But if you're an Atlanta fan or if you're a Matt Ryan fan, I'm sorry, but I'm not.
We celebrate on March 28th up here in New England. We celebrate that day every year.
Could you imagine the irony if he retired on that day? Could you imagine
Nobody would let him do that.
Oh my God. But just imagine if he like woke up and he's like, you know what? Today's a good day to retire. And it's like, Matt, do you know what today is? It's like a Thursday or something. No, it's more than that, Matt. Don't do it.
I remember there was at one point during the season, like some of the announcers kind of did him dirty. Where I forget how the thing went, how it went down and who it was, but it was basically taking a shot about the 28-3 thing. And you're kind of spot on with that. He's never going to live that down. That's going to go with him to his grave. You know, unfortunately, because he was a really good quarterback in the league for a really good period of time. He's not Hall of Fame worthy, you know, and nothing like that, but he was a better version of Kirk Cousins, what he is now. Like, he's in there. He's effective. He's an effective quarterback. He was an MVP. Which We all know what happened during that season. We don't need to keep rehashing that, but he had Atlanta, you know, in NFC title games and the playoffs quite a bit over the course of his career. So we do wish him a happy retirement. I look forward to hearing him in the booth and hearing some more shots, subtle shots thrown at him, because it's going to just make me laugh every time. As you know, the Patriots fans that we are, we're always going to appreciate that and appreciate his sportsmanship with it, because he just takes it. There's nothing really he can do to like to respond to it other than to take it. So good kudos to him for being able to at this point. Like, it, we're going on what, 8 years now since it's happened. I'm sure he's gotten over it a little bit, but nonetheless, wish him a happy retirement. We got a few more we got to move on to that have happened, maybe not as much recently, but I feel like we haven't really hit the topics with these guys since they retired. And the next guy I want to talk about is Jason Kelce with the Eagles. We may have brought it up on a previous podcast, but hats off to that dude. You know, I'm not a fan of the Kelce brothers and what they kind of represent these days in the NFL. I'm off the field. I'm not really a fan of that, but it's hard to appreciate what that guy did for the position of center. I mean, you think center, you think of Jason Kelce. Like, there's not many centers that in the league that really pop out, at least to me personally. You're more of the historian than I am when it comes to that stuff, especially with offensive linemen, seeing as you were one when you played football. But just a stalwart on that Eagles offensive line for a long period of time. What were your thoughts on his retirement there, Mr. Hogan?
Yeah, the big thing with Jason Kelce is, ironically, that you bring up the whole best center of all time debate, because I saw somebody, when he did finally hang up the cleats, post something saying, congratulations to the greatest center of all time. And me being the stubborn New England asshole that I am, I immediately wanted to be like, no, pump the brakes. He's not the best of all time. Like, there's got to be better centers out there. And then I started racking my historian brain, and I'm going, oh, crap. I think he might be the best center of all time, because if you look at his resume, what he was able to do as long as he did it with the different quarterbacks, this is going to be crossing sports, and I know it's going to sound a little strange, but if we got any Red Sox fans out there, this might make sense to you. I almost consider Jason Kelce the football equivalent of Jason Veritek for the Red Sox. You know why? Because Veritek was never like the best of the best, but whatever pitcher he worked with was phenomenal. And he caught four no hitters. So it's like, and you look at the resume of like Kelce, where he went through the quarterbacks that he did between Wentz, Nick Foles, Jalen Hurts. I think he might have been potentially there with like the Vic show at one point. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, because he was there for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But to revolutionize the way he played the center position for us fatties out there, all day I'll sit there and gloat over that. And like you said, I agree wholeheartedly with, I can't stand his brother. That's on record. Everybody knows how I feel about Travis. Mm-hmm. Like, he can go pound sand for all I care. But Jason, best of luck in retirement to you, buddy. You were a phenomenal addition to football. We're gonna miss you. Well, maybe I won't miss We won't miss you on the field. I'll miss you in general for what you did for the sport. So hats off to you.
Real quick. He didn't miss a game the last eight seasons since 2015. He played every single game.
Yeah, he was an Iron Man. And you could tell that the wear and tear it took on his body, especially where they started doing the tush push and all that crap there at that point. You could tell by the end, he was talking, and every time he heard that play, and he was like, fuck, like he wanted no part of that towards the end. And I don't blame him. I would not want to be doing that at that age. But we're going to flip to the opposite side here for the other retirement that I don't think we mentioned it in previous podcasts. And it's one that is, I wanted to talk about. Aaron Donald decided to hang it up. And I know that was probably a couple weeks ago now, but like, we want to talk about greatest of all time. Sneak preview. We haven't done D lineman yet. He's probably going to be on my top five list.
Consensus. I mean,
this guy was a stud. Did he have any season in his career where he wasn't an all pro or a pro bowler? I honestly don't know.
There was one season. Well, his rookie season, he was not a All-Pro.
He should have been, probably.
He was a defensive rookie of the year.
There you go.
And then 2022, he was not because he missed six games. But he was a Pro Bowler every year of his career.
I mean, for me personally, and I don't want to speak for you again, Burge, but like watching Aaron Donald play, he terrified me going into the second Super Bowl against the Rams, because I'm sitting there going, well, you need three guys to block him, and he's a nose tackle, and that's, you don't block a nose tackle with three guys. So he was just, watching J.J. Watt come up the way that he did, and I remember thinking at the time that, you know, J.J. Watt is a special player, and he might be go down as the greatest D lineman of all time. And then to see what Aaron Donald did after what J.J. Watt did was just absolutely incredible, and I couldn't be happier for him. I guess being able to hang up the cleats in his term, because he did everything he wanted to do. He accomplished everything, and I got to admit, like, even though the Patriots were the ones that beat that Rams team, it did kind of, like, I felt bad for him, because if there was one person on that Rams team who I felt deserved a ring, it was Aaron Donald, with the passion and the way he played the game. So I was happy to see at least him get a ring on his before his time was up there. So I don't know if you got any thoughts on Aaron Donald, just one of the best of all time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, he's first ballot Hall of Famer, absolutely no doubt. It's hard for me to think of anybody really who would be the greatest of his generation at the position. You mentioned J.J. Watt, but I consider them kind of offset, because J.J. Watt was a little bit older than Aaron Donald was. But the years that he was in the running for Defensive Player of the Year, I'm excluding the last few years of his career and the first year. So you're talking about everything in the middle there. I think it was a span of almost 10 years. He didn't finish worse than top five in the voting for the Defensive Player of the Year. He won three of them. Like, that dude could wreck an offensive game plan on his own. He would plug up the run and he would get after the quarterback. Seemed like every play. Obviously, it wasn't every play, but it seemed like it when you're watching a game against them. Like, I share your sentiments when it comes to that 2018 Super Bowl, where it's like, especially when the score was so low in that Super Bowl, it's like, dude, he's, all intents and purposes, neutering Tom Brady's offense. And we know the offense that year was different, but like, they neutered it.
He did his job, and then they still lost. That's the crazy part.
Exactly. So I feel the same way. And first ballot Hall of Famer for me. And like you said, spoiler alert, like, he's going to be consensus in our top fives. I don't think there's going to be, it should be across the board, you know, for anybody ranking the greatest at the position, in my opinion, just the greatest of his generation and that of his era. And that's enough for me to really, really put him there.
I think the one play that really encapsulates who Aaron Donald was a player was, I forget if it was last year or the year before, where they were playing Seattle, and I know you must have seen this clip where Geno Smith was dropping back and somebody on the O-line screwed up royally, and Aaron Donald had a free shot at him, and they had Geno mic'd up, and all you could hear him go was, "Oh my gosh!" As he's coming straight at his face. I died when I saw that video, because it's just like, any grown man on the planet would have reacted the exact same way if you saw Donald full speed coming at your face. So,
dude, I probably would have just gone down. If it was me, I would have just gone down. I wouldn't have even tried to extend the play. I don't care if I'm a professional football player. I'm going down. I'm protecting myself.
Fetal position and just immediately start crying your eyes out. Yep, I surrender. I give up.
Oh man, yeah. So congrats, Aaron Donald. Enjoy it. Glad you got to go out on your own terms there. Got one more interesting tie to home retirement that went on, probably, I would say, within the last two weeks at this point. Maybe actually longer than that, but maybe like in the last month. And that was Logan Ryan, cornerback, officially decided to hang up the cleats. And obviously, he had, I don't want to call it mediocre, but he was just an effective corner. Like, he's not in the conversations for the best of his time or anything like that. Like, You don't think cornerback. You don't think Logan Ryan. But he was effective pretty much everywhere that he played. He did play for a couple of rough teams. But in terms of his time in New England, when the Patriots drafted him, he worked his way up to being a starting corner for the team. And I remember back in the 2014 Super Bowl, like he had risen right up the depth chart for that Seattle Super Bowl. Like he was by the end of the day, he was number three, you know, when Kyle Arrington finally got the hook and Butler came in, and Butler, I think, was a little bit lower down at that point. But like Logan Ryan was on the field every play for that Super Bowl. So for me, I was bummed to see him retire. I really wanted to see him get that ring this year with San Francisco when he, I don't want to say came out of retirement, but he didn't have a job for the period of this year until the San Francisco 49ers came calling late in the season. And, you know, his biggest play that everybody is going to remember, especially in New England, is going to be a play that was not involved with the Patriots, not as a member of the New England Patriots. And that was the wild card game in 2019-2020 season. He picked off Tom Brady's last pass attempt as Brady was departing the Patriots. So for me, that's always going to sting in the back of my head when I think about him, but it's not going to change my opinion of the player. I loved him for the 4 years that he was in New England.
Yeah, he was a great corner for the time that he spent with us. I think I distinctly remember it was his rookie year. I think he might have gotten a pick six against the Jets, and immediately I was thinking in my head, like, I freaking like this kid. I like him because, A, screw the Jets. Mm-hmm. B, pick six as a rookie, I mean, you're doing something right, and especially in that scheme with Belichick, I mean, it's no simple thing to go out there as a rookie and get meaningful playing time, especially mm-hmm. where you said in that season, I think, I'm not sure if 2014 was his rookie year, but either way, second year. So you're battling Revis and you're battling Brandon Browner at the time when they're at the pinnacle of their careers. But yeah, I think he fit in right really, really well after the departure of those guys, where you had Butler, who became the superstar really because of what catapulted from that Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Ryan was a great number two guy that just, like you said, you don't want to call him mediocre, but he also wasn't that above average tier. He was just a solid, hardworking dude that was going to make plays for you and do what you needed him to do on the field to make you a better football team at the end of the day. And when he left the Patriots, obviously it was unfortunate, especially where he went to Tennessee. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I think he went to the Giants after he went to Tennessee. And for some reason, that grinded my gears a little bit more than him going to Tennessee. I still got a bone to pick with the Giants. As a Pats fan, I think we all do. But anyway, like you said, you love him for what he did for you. You hate him for what he did against you, but happy retirement to Logan Ryan. All the best to all those guys that we mentioned.
One final thought on him. He struck me as the kind of guy when you talk about good corners, like the best, like if you don't hear his name, yeah, he's doing everything right.
Absolutely. And
again, it's been a while. We're old. My mind tends to go a little bit. I don't remember hearing that guy's name a lot when you were talking with the Patriots, unless it was for something good. Like, you never were like, oh, come on, Ryan. Like, what, you getting burnt again? Like, we never made those comments about him. So he was just, he seemed to fit the scheme that Patricia and Belichick were really throwing out at the time for New England. So he did switch to free safety towards the end of his career too.
I was going to say, I thought he switched to safety. He had a track kind of like the McCourty brother, mm-hmm. where he started at corner, but then went to safety. I think that's a natural progression, though. You love to see that, though, for guys that can take that step where they understand that they're no longer either A, physically able to do the job, or B, it's like, if you can make that transition to a different position to help the younger guys get to that next level, it's a phenomenal way to betterment your team. And it was so great to see McCourty do it. And I thought, like you said, I had a feeling that Ryan did the same thing. I think especially when he went to New York, because I think when Peppers came to us and then mm-hmm. Ryan went to New York, and that's where he became a safety. But yeah, it's just it's crazy to think that we're really seeing. It's funny because as Pats fans, you and I saw the transition from the early dynasty where you saw those guys slowly leave the league, and it was like your Brewskis, your Vrabels, your Seymours, your Troy Browns, your Vinatieri's, all those guys just slowly started disappearing. You're like, holy shit, we're getting old. Then we had the second dynasty, and we're like, oh, okay, no, don't forget about those guys. We're good. We got another whole dynasty to worry about. And now those guys are starting to leave, and we're like, oh, my God, it's happening again. Like, what the hell's going on? Now we're really getting old.
The wild thing is the guys that are walking away now are in the ballpark of our own age. That's what's different for me. That's what's different for me. You know, before it's like, oh, my childhood idols are retiring. Yeah, they're getting older because I'm getting ready to go to high school and to college. I'm going into the best years of my life. You know, like, okay, I can get over that. Now it's like you're seeing it in hockey with a lot of those guys. You're seeing it in football now, too. All the guys that were playing that were our age that played through the 2010s are all hanging up the cleats. And it's like now we're into the younger generation. So when we talk about Bill Belichick's coaching style and all that, you're dealing with younger generation. So it's harder for us to maybe relate to the players with that. So it's definitely these guys leaving the league is definitely opening the door for new talent, new personalities and all that. So it'll be exciting to see where the league goes here.
We should just rename ourselves Grumpy Old Men Podcast. That's where we're getting to. Is that
dude,
what
it is? On Twitter, I get that all the time, man. I'm the grumpy old Bruins fan who is always mad about everything. So why not bring it here, right?
Hey, we're New England through and through. We got to show our colors some way or another. So
exactly.
All right, enough about retirements. What else we got? We can bring him back a segment that's a fan favorite around here, Burge. What do we got going on?
The top five segment is back with a new name. It's kind of new. I'm just trying to change it up a little bit, given, you know, we're rebranding ourselves a little bit here. The BTP Goats. The BTP Goats segment is back. Our lovely ranking of top five. Whatever the heck we want to talk about. Doesn't have to be just players. It's for everything. We're gonna do everything with this segment, and it's going to be our best. And for you listeners out there, it's going to be up to you guys to basically settle this argument between Hogan and I on who's better and who knows football more when it comes to these segments. So this week, we're bringing in the top five undrafted players of all time. We're trying to keep it fitting with the theme of the week, which the NFL draft is going to be occurring later at the end of this week as we record on Tuesday, the 23rd. Exciting times for franchises. Sometimes those goats don't get picked and they end up signing with teams after the fact for basically you're not using an asset on them. You're just trying to go out and sign a guy to a contract. So that's a theme we're going with this week. We have some listener lists, which we will get to after Mr. Hogan and I decide to, you know, argue ourselves through this segment here. But I want to start with you, Hogan. I want to leave the honorable mentions and, you know, the names that you may just miss the lists and all that. I want to leave that to the end. I want to start with your number five here. I want to see where your head's at and see if I'm on the right track or not. Mr.
Historian is popping up all right, because we got an old folk man on my number five spot here. Patriots fans, you love him. Anybody else, you probably hate him. My number five is Adam the Kicker Vinatieri. Let's go. He's number five. And spoiler alert, I know we want to talk about honorable mentions at the end here. I'm gonna throw this in real quickly. It was honestly a toss up between Vinatieri and Justin Tucker, and Tucker does jump up on my honorable mentions list. The reason why I don't give the honor to Tucker right now is because who else you gonna call when you need a clutch kick, either in 10 feet of snow or the Super Bowl? You're going with Adam Vinatieri. The guy was phenomenal for the longest time. I think he played almost from 96 to 2019. Absolutely insane. And as a kicker, granted, yeah, you're on the field maybe 10 plays a game if you're lucky. But at the same time, with what Vinatieri was able to do, especially in the conditions where he kicked for New England as long as he did, was unbelievable. I don't think there's a Patriots fan alive that will tell you that they don't remember the snow kick. I mean, that was just
both of them,
both, but just the one that sent it to overtime. It was probably the more magical for me personally, just the distance, the conditions after the tuck rule. It was just that solidified what he was as a Patriots fan. But then to freaking up the ante with the Super Bowl and then to do it again 2 years later was just absolutely phenomenal. If it wasn't for, like I said, Tucker creeping up on him, I would have Vinatieri probably as the greatest kicker of all time. But for most clutch kicker of all time, number five on my list, Adam Vinatieri. Burge, who you got?
Number five, I have one of the kickers you just mentioned. One of those kickers you just mentioned is my number five. It's not the GOAT, though. It's not the GOAT. I have Justin Tucker at number five already. I have him there. What he's done in the 11 years that he's been in the league for Baltimore, the consistency that he has provided that Baltimore Ravens team with kicks. He came in the year after Billy Cundiff shanked that field goal to tie that AFC Championship game that sent the Patriots to the Super Bowl to play the Giants the second time. He came in 2012, the year after that. The Ravens were desperate for a kicker. Billy Cundiff really screwed them in that year, and Justin Tucker has come in and not looked back. I believe his kick is an NFL record. Is it right? 66 yards is the NFL record. He has the NFL record for the longest kick. He's averaged, his average over his career, 90.2% for his field goals. That is like as close to automatic as you can get in terms of an NFL kicker. And he does it in Baltimore, where they do experience real shitty weather. Let's be real. Like, it's not New England weather like Adam Vinatieri, but he's kicking outside. He's not a dome kicker. He's not benefiting from having no wind and no conditions factoring into, you know, where he's at. He doesn't, like you said, he doesn't have the clutch kicks, which is why he's on number five on my list. And Mr. Vinatieri might happen to be located somewhere else, which, spoiler alert, he is. But he's still only 34 years old. Like, Vinatieri, who knows where Justin Tucker's going to go. And I don't want to truly speculate that, but like, if he's going to match Vinatieri's longevity, he's got to kick for another 13 years in the league to match that. So that's why he's not even with where he's at with his distance and his leg and his strength and his accuracy with all that. We all know when I talk about this stuff, longevity means a lot to me. It means a lot to me when I start talking about greatest of all time. I do believe Justin Tucker is going to get there, which is why I put him on this list. But that's the reason he's number five for me and not higher on this list, because kickers get a lot of crap in the NFL when they miss their kicks. I don't feel like they get as much credit when they make them, unless you're talking, like you said, with the snow kicks and all that and the weird conditions and everything. But Justin Tucker, Mr. Automatic, when I want to make a field goal in today's NFL, I want him making the kick for me from any distance. I don't care where it's coming from. I want him doing it. So Justin Tucker is number five on my list.
And you forgot, real quick, you forgot the most important fact about Justin Tucker. Do you want me to say it? I know it's going to piss you off.
Go ahead. I don't care.
Hook 'em horns, baby. Texas all day long.
I can't even hate that. Texas. I hate Texas football because of you. Woo! You're the only reason I hate it, but I'm not going to hate on this. I'm not going to hate on this because that dude backs his stuff up with his play.
And let's go.
He's going to continue to do it. So
hook 'em horns, baby. Give me number four, Burge. Get me riled up. Let's go.
Number four, I'm going to quarterback. Kurt Warner. A lot of people might say that I have him too low on this list. I know Hogan isn't going to feel that way. Spoiler alert. But he came into the league undrafted. We'll talk about, you know, he knew where he came from, his background, NFL Europe, arena football, all that. But when he came into the league, took over for an injured Trent Green, that Rams team had all these, aspirations for deep runs at the time in 1999. Preseason, Rodney Harrison takes out Trent Green's knee. They think everything's lost. Kurt Warner comes in, set the record at the time for most touchdowns in a season. I believe it was the record at 41, broken by Peyton Manning a little bit after that. and won a Super Bowl for that team. Yeah, we can make the argument that he had all this talent around him, which he did. Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, a very good defense. But he was able to get it done for that 99 team, the greatest show on turf. They kind of continued with that. And Kurt Warner got a little banged up, which, again, why he was not higher on this list for me. He got banged up. And then, obviously we know what happened, us Patriots fans know what happened in 2001 with the Rams. That team was, again, looking like the greatest show on turf was coming back. And the Patriots were able to beat them defensively in that game. Kurt Warner did not have a good game in that Super Bowl. But it was, again, I'm going to give more credit to the Patriots defense than I am going to bash Kurt Warner for that game, because he was getting his bell rung in that game. One of the only quarterbacks, if not the only quarterback. No, he's not the only quarterback, but he was for a long time to take two teams to the Super Bowl. And boy, was I an Arizona Cardinals fan in that Super Bowl against... Yep. Oh, we got Maverick. Maverick in the house.
Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Maverick. Love it. He's upset about your Kurt Warner pick, obviously. That's what's going on.
Exactly.
He heard the steam coming out of my head, and he was like, you know what? I'm going to jump in on this segment, and I'm going to put Burgess in his goddamn place with what his thoughts are on Kurt Warner. So I'm sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Maverick might be making an appearance once in a while on here. But anyway, let's get back to the Kurt Warner loving, as my co-host so dashingly wants to appraise on him.
He'd be higher on the list too for me if he wasn't a backup in the middle of his career with the Giants, lost his job to Mark Bolger in St. Louis. But he took the job back in Arizona, I believe it was from Matt Leinart. He was Matt Leinart's, brought in to be Matt Leinart's backup in Arizona, and he took the job. And he took the job from him and had a couple of really good seasons before he ended up hanging him up. Went to the Pro Bowl as a 37-year-old quarterback in 2008 for the Cardinals. Also had a couple of good receivers there too with Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin. So that helped things for him there. But man, I was an Arizona Cardinals fan in that Super Bowl. I did not want to see the Pittsburgh Steelers win that Super Bowl. All in all, he had an effective career. And I love the fact that he brought two different teams to the Super Bowls, because that does not happen very often. Most times when quarterbacks leave their first team, it's because they're kind of on the downward spiral of their career and you don't really see it happen. Peyton Manning might be the only other one. At least at this point, I'd have to research it, but he's the only one that pops off the top of my head.
Really?
Tom Brady. Okay. I choose not to accept that Super Bowl. I choose not to accept it. So that's why I forgot that one.
Yes. But let the hate flow through you.
But yeah, that's why I have Kurt Warner at number four and not higher on my list. Hogan, who you got at number four?
Oh, buddy, you want to talk about what that Super Bowl was in 2008. I got my guy number four that picked off your number four guy and returned a touchdown 100 yards to seal Kurt Warner's fate in that 2008 Super Bowl. I'm talking about the beast, James Harrison.
One of the greatest Super Bowl interceptions of all time, if not the greatest.
Absolutely phenomenal. He was just, first and foremost, James Harrison, if you go back and look at his career, and how topsy-turvy it was from the beginning till the end. This guy almost seemed like he belonged in a mental institute as opposed to a football field at the beginning of his career. He went undrafted, obviously being on the list. He was picked up by the Steelers, and I believe they cut him like two or three times within the first 2 years of him being on the team, to then be picked up by the Ravens. And then the Ravens sent him to NFL Europe, which, believe it or not, is where I first saw James Harrison play back in the day when NFL Network used to carry the NFL Europe games. I remember watching him play over there and being like, this guy is a beast. I'm surprised he's not like on a team right now. And then apparently somebody with the Steelers organization, you know, came to their senses and realized, hey, we got to scoop this guy back up. And then this guy went on to have a phenomenal career for the Steelers. I mean, Super Bowl champion, was, I believe, defensive player of the year at least once. But then, I mean, the caveat is the guy took over the starting job for Joey Porter. I mean, who was a Steelers legend. Mm-hmm. And he seamlessly just went right in there. I mean, obviously, a lot of people consider Harrison, I believe, to be, you know, a dirty player. He had some questionable hits, which, take them as they are. Yeah, I mean, the guy was a lunatic on the field. You kind of have to be to play in the NFL in the first place. But with the interceptions he was able to get, especially, like I said, the 100-yard one in the Super Bowl. Actually, I think it was it 100 yards? It was 100 yards, especially with how crazy the whole situation was. But the sacks that he was able to get, I distinctively remember, I want to say it was 2008 when he destroyed Matt Castle in one of those games when we played the Steelers that year. And it was just like, I thought Matt Castle wasn't going to wake up after being hit by him. So he was a crazy man. I love that the Pats signed him for that one stint. And I was really hoping we would win that Super Bowl when he was with us.
Me too.
We're not going to talk about that Super Bowl in particular, but I enjoyed having Harrison on the team that year. And after 15 seasons, when he finally hung it up, I was like, yeah, it was time. But talk about a guy. I followed him on Instagram for a while. You want to talk about a workout beast? Like, dude. I think the dude was more jacked after he retired than he 100%. Was when he played. Like, I thought he was crazy on the field. He's crazier in the weight room. That's saying something. So, James Harrison, I got him at number four, possibly the greatest undrafted linebacker in history. We'll see. Let's go right into three. I'm going to go back to the opposite side of the field for offense, and I'm going to go with Jason Peters as my number three undrafted all-time player. Jason Peters, it's a little bit harder for those of you out there who are unaware, he is a offensive tackle. It's a little harder to put into terms of how good a lineman is. But going back to the previous segment where we talked about Logan Ryan, where you didn't hear his name a whole lot, unless he was doing something good, Jason Peters is that player on the offensive line. You will not hear his name during a game, except when they want to point out how good he is being on the field. Real quick tidbit about him. He went on undrafted. He was picked up by the Bills back in 2004. So he's still active currently in the NFL right now, which is mind boggling. So he's going almost into 20 years playing, which is crazy as an offensive lineman.
That's what makes it even crazier.
That's insane to me. But he got picked up by the Bills, where he started making a name for himself, and he was there for about 4 years. But when he went to the Philadelphia Eagles in 2009 is where he cemented himself as possibly one of the greatest offensive tackles. I got to imagine he's bound for the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's not many left tackles that have played better than him throughout the duration of his career. I mean, he was a Super Bowl champ. He's been a three-time first-team All-Pro, four-time second-team All-Pro, 9-time Pro Bowler. He's on the 2010s all-decade team. The guy just, that's what I got to give you guys, because he doesn't have stats for me to show you because he's an offensive lineman. But that in and of itself as an O-lineman is just phenomenal. But I guess I got to say, if there's one stat that really jumps out to me, if we're looking at his Wikipedia page, which I currently am, the guy has 2 receptions all-time, and one of them's for a touchdown. And you know me, I love me a fat man scoring a TD. That's just the greatest stat in the world. So Jason Peters, you got right on my list there. You're number three for me, and you're number one in my heart for representing us fatty. So thanks, buddy. Thank you, buddy. All right, Burgess, show me some love. What do you got at number three for us?
Crazy thing about Jason Peters, he's 41 years old, still playing at left tackle in the NFL. That to me is wild. Number three. Minnesota Viking legend, John Randall. This dude was an absolute beast of the 1990s. Hogan, you and I were talking a little bit about this, and I don't want to steal any possible thunder that might be coming your way here. But if you think of defensive linemen, obviously of the 90s, you think of Reggie White with the Packers and all that. But like, John Randall was the epitome of that. I loved what he brought to those 90s teams, those Vikings teams, and especially in the late 1990s. It's a real shame that they didn't win a Super Bowl with Randall Cunningham, Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Robert Smith on the offensive side of the ball. That doesn't even account for the defensive side of things, and that's because John Randall was a major part of that defense, and he was an absolute animal. Dude was like an 8-time consecutive All-Pro over the course of the 1990s. Double-digit sacks, for a good portion of 10 years of that period of time as well. Just an absolute stalwart of that Minnesota Vikings line. Another guy that played a long career for a fat dude on the defensive side, played until he was 36, which is, again, not something that, especially in that period of time, you didn't really hear too much of guys playing, especially those positions playing that late. Usually injuries, body breaks down, catches up with you at that point, especially when you're playing in the trenches like they had. But this guy would wreck a game plan for an offensive line. And I use him in Madden now when I play Ultimate Team, and he's always a guy I go out and get every single time. I am really, really bummed out that those mid-90s Vikings teams, as a kid when I was coming up watching football with the Patriots and when they were starting to get their way, I loved me some of those Minnesota Viking teams with Dante Culpepper and Randall Cunningham. So I really do wish that John Randall was able to get that ring, you know, playing in Minnesota. He's loved up there in Minnesota country. He's a Hall of Famer, 7-time Pro Bowler. Like, dude was an absolute animal. So I got him at number 3. The only reason he's at that point, and, you know, I'll get into it in a little bit with my top 2 picks here, but if it wasn't for those two guys, this guy would easily sit atop my list. So John Randall at number 3. Hogan, I want to get your number 2 first before I go. I want to get it to you right now.
Let's All right. Let's do it. We
got some words for me.
I do have some words for you, because as much as you were loving all over Kurt Warner earlier on your list, I left Kurt Warner off my list because fuck Kurt Warner. That's what I say. I don't like him. I hate him. I think he's overrated. He had 3 good seasons. He doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. All right, I'm being bitter. We're ranting. Number 2 on my list, Warren Moon. Yeah, you look a little shocked over there, Burge. What's going on? You don't like that choice? You don't like that choice? Okay.
I want to hear your justification before I rebut it.
All right. I got some justification for you. All right. So here we go. Warren Moon, overlooked when he was coming out of college, which is absolutely insane to me, because for whatever reason, the knock on him was that he just was not going to succeed in the NFL. Very similar to, you know, your Doug Flutie's and your other players that are Kurt Warner, obviously. But what he did is he went to the CFL directly afterwards and won 5 championships playing in the CFL, and set, I want to say he set like a ridiculous amount of records while he was up there. Won the MVP twice, did a lot of crazy things. Then finally the NFL looked at him and went, oh, maybe he can play football for us. So let's get him over and onto this. So he essentially comes to the NFL as a rookie at 28 years old, after playing football up north for 5 years or 6 years and winning 5 championships. And what does he do? He goes right to a poverty franchise called the Houston Oilers. And what does he do with the Houston Oilers? Oh, you know, he spends about close to a decade there and turns them from the bottom of the barrel to a legitimate team by the time that he's done there. And I absolutely love the fact that he got his comeuppance and his credit due by being put in the NFL Hall of Fame, because he was a phenomenal player at this time. Was he the best of the best? No. But what he was able to do for the city of Houston at that time was phenomenal. I mean, the first 3 years that he was there, they didn't win more than 5 games in any of those 3 years. The last few years that he was with Houston, 11 wins, 10 wins. And then a couple of, you know, okay, 9-7, 8-7s. But you know what? He ended up leaving Houston as the all-time winning quarterback for that franchise, which is phenomenal, because he had already spent 5-6 other years in a completely different league, not playing in the NFL. And then what does he do? He goes to Minnesota, has a little bit of sustained success. I wouldn't say the best record overall as a quarterback win-loss ratio, but if you look at his numbers with what he was able to do, he put up a lot of touchdowns, and he put up a lot of interceptions too. But again, he's you know, Brett Favre is in the Hall of Fame too, and the guy broke the record for the most interceptions. So we're going to hold that against him. Sue me. Please don't sue me. I don't want to get sued. But anyway, Warren Moon, is special to me because I look at him, especially where I want to shit on Kurt Warner as much as I do. You hit the nail on the head earlier about Kurt Warner having your Isaac Bruce, your Torrey Holtz, your Marshall Faulk, your Larry Fitzgerald, your Anquan Boldin surrounding him to be able to get him to a place that he was able to get to for the successful seasons that he had, which is warranted. If anybody can tell me one player that played with Warren Moon in his time in Houston, I'll eat my shoe right now.
Bert? We know I'm not. We know we're not going to eat your shoe. We did this exercise before we started recording,
and I'm going to do this exercise while we're recording because I know I'm not going to eat my shoe. Warren Moon was able to do the things he did with no names around him, and as a historian, I can tell you that because Earl Campbell was probably the best player that Houston ever had, and he was already gone by the time Warren Moon got there. So what Warren Moon was able to do, and then pass that legacy on to Steve McNair when he left, and then have Steve McNair come in and Eddie George and those guys follow him up and have a run to the Super Bowl the way they did in the later 90s. I give all the credit in the world to Warren Moon. So he's number two on my list. Burgess, who you got?
I reserve my top two on my list here for guys that I consider among the greats at the position.
Oh boy. Here
number two, you kind of already hit on it, so I don't need to spend a whole heck of a lot of time on him. It's Adam Vinatieri. When I think of greatest kickers of all time, it used to be way back in the day, it used to be Morton Anderson. Adam Vinatieri took that from him and kind of blew him out of the water. Like you said, again, not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. Greatest clutch kicker in the history of the game. The snowball kick, like you said, to tie it and then to win it. Two of the greatest kicks I think I've ever seen, given the conditions that were there. Played for two teams, played for New England, had basically a second career with the Indianapolis Colts. Unfortunately, took them to, you know, won the Super Bowl the year that he left after the Patriots decided to poop themselves in the second half of that AFC Championship game. But I digress. But I got Adam Vinatieri there. I think of him. And the fact that he played for as long as he did and was effective for as long as he was, he basically had it up until his last year when he really kind of fell off a cliff at age 47. Like, that's ridiculous that a football player, again, I know it's a kicker, but it's ridiculous that a football player is able to stay in shape and be able to be that good at his job, among the best of the best at that age. So Adam Vinatieri is my greatest, or second greatest. I wanted to say greatest, but
yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did, but I couldn't do it with the next guy. The next guy for me holds a real kind of a special place in my heart. And that I'm going to go right to my number one, my best undrafted player of all time, Antonio Gates. The guy was an absolute stud with San Diego for the entirety of his career. Again, another guy that played a very long time in the league. He played until he was 38. I consider him, also with Tony Gonzalez, is a guy who really revolutionized the tight end position in the NFL to be more involved offensively. And this might be a little bit of the fantasy football nerd in me talking with this, but like, I always wanted to, I had to have him on my team. Unbelievable play. He was a basketball player. That's a wild thing to me, is like, he was a basketball player that converted to a football player. He was a three-time All-Pro, and he was an All-Pro 3 years in a row early on in his career in the mid-2000s decade. Helped those San Diego Chargers teams with Phillip Rivers and LT gain some relevance. I know they didn't get over the hump and, you know, get to a Super Bowl because they were running through the New England Patriots, and we loved making them angry during that period of time. But some AFC Championship appearances there, I think. Phillip Rivers can credit Antonio Gates a lot for the ascension of his career while he was in San Diego, having that big body tight end to go along with the wide receivers in that offense, and the running back LT really, really kind of put them on the map. They're a laughable franchise now that they're all gone, but like back then, like they were a tough out in the playoffs. And, you know, he was a Pro Bowler eight times, was on 2000s team, the Hall of Fame's 2000s team. Again, I credit him along with Tony Gonzalez as guys that really kind of revolutionized the position of the tight end to be way more involved in the passing game, to kind of carved the path for the Travis Kelce's, the Rob Gronkowski's of the world. So Antonio Gates for me is my number one drafted play, undrafted player of all time. Hogan, who do you got?
Well, again, we're going to be retreading a little bit here, but we're going right to number one for me is John Randall. Just you hit a lot of his stats, and I want to just touch on some of the things that made John Randall as good as he was. Six-time first-team All-Pro between the years 1993 to 1998, which is just absolutely insane. I mean, we did all the loving of Aaron Donald earlier. If there was a guy that was Aaron Donald before Aaron Donald, it was John Randall. And the only reason I'll go to my grave saying this is that the reason why John Randall might not be known as the best defensive lineman in the 90s is because of a guy called Reggie White that just happened to play at the same time. But you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that was better than John Randall and what he was able to do with the Vikings. On top of all of his all pros and all of his sacks and all his accolades, the guy missed five games.
That's wild.
His entire career. Five. As a defensive lineman, he missed five, and they were all in the last 3 years of his career, which he played from 1990 to 2003. And what's even more incredible about everything with him is that he had the double-digit sacks starting in 1992. He just missed having double-digit sacks in 91. He started in 1992, and he didn't miss double-digit sacks until 2000. Oh, and then he only had eight in 2000. And then guess what? He upped the ante and had 11 sacks in 2001 with a brand new team after Minnesota was like, nah, you're washed up. You're done. Get out of here. Like, really? Get the hell out of here with that. So John Randall is just, he's a special player. Like I said, you hit on a lot of his stuff, and I won't go back to it again, but there's nobody better on this list. And the fact that he went undrafted is just mind-boggling to me. Because this guy should not have been missed whatsoever by any scout, by anybody. And he's my number one greatest undrafted player of all time. So that's my list. Burge, what do we got? Wrap us up.
All right. Well, we got to hit on a little bit of our honorable mention stuff here first. We're going to talk about our names before we quickly will reveal a couple of our listeners who have provided us with their top lists. So honorable mention for me, Priest Holmes was an absolute beast of a running back for the Kansas City Chiefs when he was there. He's a fantasy football god for that period of time. Throw the horns down, dude. I don't want to see them.
Hook 'em horns, baby.
I also had Warren Moon on my honorable mention list. I don't need to talk anymore about him. Tony Romo, I thought that, you know, for that era of that he played, he was a, I don't want to say among the best in the league, but he was a top, we'll call B-tier quarterback. And he was effective and kind of came out of nowhere in terms of my eyes and was able to really do some special things with that Dallas team, despite his lack of ability of holding field goals. Tommy, Marky, I'm talking to you.
Kick them while they're down.
No, geez, I'm kicking them while I'm down. That Marky's on my list, dude. Of all the stuff that you've told me.
I love it.
Honorable mention, last one, James Harrison. You already hit on it. A couple guys I left just off of all of that. I left Jason Peters there. I did.
Boo.
Maybe it's because I'm not a big offensive line. I don't know stats associated with that. That's probably why. Wes Welker, Patriots fandom there, coming out was unbelievable during the 07 campaign and till he left, was even effective for a year in Denver. And then Rod Smith, another Denver receiver for those Denver Super Bowls in the late 90s, was incredible for what he needed to do there. He also had a lot of help, so that's why he didn't quite make my list. Hogan
played forever too, didn't he?
He played for a long time.
My honorable mentions, again, not to retread, but we got Justin Tucker just missed my top five. Antonio Gates just missed my top five. I threw Kurt Warner in there, but fuck it. Anyway, and then my last guy, which is the historian of me jumping out again, is Donnie Shell, who real quick was a really, really good corner for the Steelers back during the Steel Curtain. He was not a corner. He was a safety that back during the Steel Curtain era. And I want to say that he finished his career at the time with the Steelers, like third all time in interceptions with them or something. So pretty impressive considering he's playing with Mel Blunt, Mean Joe Green, Jack Lambert, all those nasty, nasty guys in there. And to go undrafted and play with them and do as well as he did, hats off to you, Donnie Shell. And then again, these guys weren't on my honorable mentions list, but I really quickly want to throw their names out there. You got Welker in there. You got Romo. You got Priest Holmes. And then one that a lot of people kind of forget, Arian Foster. Went undrafted. He didn't
play. He was undrafted.
He didn't play a long, long time, but for the time that he played, the 7 years he was in the league, he was a monster for a couple of years. So that's what we got for those. Real quick, we're going to dive in to my buddy. We all know and love him here, Rick Griffith. He sent me his list for the top undrafted players of all time. I'm going to run through these guys very quickly. And number five, he's got Wes Welker. Number four, he's got Antonio Gates. Number three, he's got Warren Moon. Number two, he's got John Randall. And number one, he's got James Harrison. Not a bad list. A lot of my guys are on that list, so I like this list. He got a couple of honorable mentions he threw in there. He's got Vinatieri, Holmes, Jason Peters, and another historian like myself, Larry Little, in there. One of those old school guys that played for the Dolphins back in the day. Don Shula, protege, went undefeated on the 72 team. Blocked there for Larry Zonka, another fatty, another interior guy that we love. So great list, Rick. We, as always, we thank you for that. Burgess, I think we got another contribution list to go over, don't we? Who do we got? Show us some love over here. What do we got?
My boy, Tommy Bennett, sent us a nice list. His honorable mentions, guys, we already mentioned James Harrison, Priest Holmes. At number five, he's got Willie Brown. Number four, Antonio Gates. Number three, Tony Romo. Number two, Adam Vinatieri. Like where your mind's at, Tommy. Love you, buddy. Love you even more for this number one because it's going to piss Hogan off. I love it. Kurt Warner at number one.
Pew.
I love it.
Pew.
I love it.
Overrated.
As always, Tommy. My boy, thank you for sending your list in. Rick, we love you. We love the interaction that you bring to the pod that you've brought to us in the past. We want to see it keep coming. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for providing those lists to us. I think it's a good time to plug this sucker up. We're at just over an hour. The first, we'll call it the second edition of the inaugural episode of Breaking the Plane here. 2.0. Inaugural episode 2.0.
The Burge and Hogan Show.
The Burge and Hogan Show. You got a little taste. You got a little taste of what that's going to look like with the back and forth stuff here. Hogan really knows how to get under my skin. He really knows how to do it. I'm still 20 years later trying to figure it out with Hogan.
Mama always said I'd be good at something, and I got to stick with it. So
no,
and I stick it to you,
my
Burge.
To my dismay.
I love it. Anyway, real quick, I want to touch on the draft coming up. Like I said, we were obviously talking about the undrafted guys. The draft is coming up on Thursday, peeps, and we are waiting with bated breath to see what the hell is going to happen, especially here in New England town. I mean, Burge, if I hear Drake May is going to be taken at three again, I might blow my brains out if I hear that. But I keep hearing he's going to be taken, and then I keep hearing we're going to be trading to Minnesota. I don't know what's going to happen, but at this point, I know what you and me are going to be doing on Thursday night. What are we going to be doing? Let's hear it with the listeners, huh?
Around 8 p.m. Thursday night, round one of the NFL draft, the Persian Hogan Show will be going live on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube. So be sure to tune in. If the Patriots trade back, or if they, you know, let me rephrase that. If they take J.J. McCarthy at number three, I'm going to get up and walk through that door behind me. I'm going to get up and walk through that door. I'm going to be very upset if they take him at J.J. McCarthy at number three. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But we are going to be live breaking down the first round of the NFL draft on Thursday night. We can't wait. We're excited. Might have a few guests popping in to chat with us about the the draft. So stay tuned on our socials. We'll be able to tease that as we firm some stuff up, but we are very much looking forward to going live. If you recall the last time Mr. Hogan and I were live for the Bill Belichick stuff, the "what an idiot, you're an idiot" stuff came out. And I have a feeling that's going to come out again on Thursday night. And I'm just going to end up walking through that door again.
It might not be directed at you this time. I might be calling somebody else an idiot for the choices they're making on Thursday night. That will be out of my control, but the annoyance and the swears will be a flowing if the wrong decisions are made in terms of the Patriots. For any other franchise, go ahead and screw up. I don't give a shit at that point. We'll laugh. But when it comes to the Pats, oh boy, we better get this right, or last season's going to be nothing compared to what's coming up for us. So we'll certainly see, won't we?
Absolutely. Thank you for tuning in to episode 27 of Breaking the Plane. We look forward to the future here. We're excited about everything. So we hope to catch you on Thursday night for the live stream. Catch us on our socials. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. Peace.
Later.